The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra. Not missing the drama of league football or deadline day at all, because we've got internationals. England. Pod raises the real questions ahead of Moldova and Ukraine. Can a manager who can't get into a director's box access the World Cup? And how come, with that ongoing shampoo endorsement, Joe Hart is still so flaky? There's big, big qualifying stories from all around the world, posts, tweets, Sid, and more in this Football Weekly Extra. Internationals, Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Jacob Steinberg.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Shana Tova.
Absolutely. Yeah. And James Horncastle.
Hi, Jimbo.
Good stuff. So much to talk about today. Here it is. Oh, here's Domino doing our work for us. Week one, Arsenal in crisis, says Domino. Week two, Man City in crisis. Week three, Man United in crisis. And here's week four, England in crisis. England in crisis, James Horncastle.
Maybe not immediately. I think that I think we'd expect them to get past Moldova. It's just it's leading into the Ukraine game, because I think that draw at home to Ukraine last year, you know, could come back to haunt England. Yeah, I think Ukraine are on a very good run of form. I think they've won their last three games: away at Poland, away at Montenegro, where obviously England didn't get a result. Yeah, it's tricky given our sort of propensity to draw too many games against the sides that are completed to competing with us to qualify.
Key points in the Group H situation: Montenegro lead the group, 2 points ahead of England. England have a game in hand on Montenegro, as do Ukraine, who are only 1 point behind England in third place and are hosting England on Tuesday next week. And of course, Wayne Rooney's out, Phil Jones is out, Glenn Johnson's out, many other players are sitting out training. Barry.
Well, I'd expect England to beat Moldova comfortably, and I expect Ukraine to beat San Marino comfortably, which means the England-Ukraine game in Ukraine takes on a huge significance. But I wouldn't worry too much if I was an England fan. They still have Montenegro and Poland at home, everything. Their World Cup qualifications hopes are very much in their own hands, and it's a bit early to be pressing the panic button.
All right, then. England, of course, beat Moldova 5-0 last time they met, but that was in... James, how is it pronounced? Chisinau?
Chisinau, apparently.
Wow, that sounds like a fascinating fact about Moldova. Have you got any others of those?
Yeah, apparently there's the elder brother of the martini comes from Moldova, which is called the Buchitul Moldovai. Contains infusions of more than 20 plants and herbs.
I'm a little bit disappointed that that's the one fact you pulled out about Moldova. You could have gone with others, like it's placed the seventh among the top world wine exporters.
Of what?
Of wine. I said world wine. Did I not say wine? Of wine.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. It's winemaking's been going on for over 5,000 years there now, Jacob, to be fair.
Well done to them.
Yeah. Anything else about Moldova you'd like to throw at the listeners?
The oldest oak tree here is 600 years old.
Certainly is. You were mentioning before a pretty remarkable stat, and I say this in all seriousness. Out of 152 countries, including in the ranking of internet access speed, so basically world internet access speed, where do you think Moldova is?
I'd say it's third.
It's third? Forget your FIFA
Champions
rankings.
League.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the semi-final place.
They've also got the eighth greatest cave on the planet.
Yes. There are more than 40 parks in Moldova, which for a country is a pretty large number, and excitingly, 20 are in good repair. Barry, you're singularly unimpressed. Perhaps, your jaw will drop just a little bit further when I tell you that Moldova is one of only three national flags that differ on their obverse and reverse sides. Do you know which the other two are? Don't pretend you don't want to know. Would you be happy if I just continue the rest of the pod and don't tell you which the other two are? So this is a national flag we're talking about that has a different design on one side to the other.
Yeah.
You don't care which the other two
They're not UEFA nations.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think I've seen this on...
He cares.
I've seen this on Big Bang Theory before. What's his name? The Mega Sheldon's flag YouTube channel. I can't remember. Sheldon's something. Flags with Sheldon or something. Anyway, he covered this, but I can't remember what the answer is, and I don't care. Can we move on?
Well, just to wrap up this England thing, and by the way,
Paraguay and Saudi Arabia were the surprising other answers to that question. Let's talk about England and Greg Dyke's astonishing proclamation that they should target winning the World Cup in 2022. Why then? Also, can you imagine any other nation coming out with a statement?
Well, it's to be played in winter, isn't it? So that's going to suit England.
Ah.
Yeah. Because they don't like playing in heat. But they're not going to have to play in heat because being Qatar, moving to winter, suits England. They like playing in cold. Everyone else is going to be out of their comfort zone.
It did seem...
I think he just picked a random number.
Right.
He's come out, he said, we have problems. I don't know what those problems are. But even though I don't know what those problems are, I'm pretty confident we can solve them in enough time to win the World Cup in 2022. It's nonsense.
Mm.
But every FA chairman in the past before him has said it. Goldstein said it in 2000, we'll win the World Cup in 6 years. Sven said in 2006, we'll win the World Cup in that year. Amazingly, England didn't win the World Cup that year. And Dyke, while I'm sure he means well, he's a well-intentioned man who's very good at most of the jobs he's done in the past. Indeed, it's largely down to him that the FA is forced to kowtow to the Premier League these days in such a fashion, because he was instrumental in the Premier League becoming the Premier League. And now he's the one who has to try and persuade them to be nicer to the FA, something which, you know, why should they bother doing? The Premier League is largely comprised of clubs owned by rich foreigners who are only interested in the bottom line, and they couldn't care less about the England team, and why should they?
A fair point. Barry was suggesting that England fans shouldn't worry too much and that qualification will be set up. Jacob, do you agree with that?
Well, I think they'll win tomorrow night, but I don't think they'll win on Tuesday against Ukraine, especially with some of the injuries they've got. You know, although Rooney's not been in the best form, maybe for Manchester United, he still scores quite a few for England. I think he scored against Montenegro away, scored against Poland away. Although they drew those games, you know, they still needed Rooney to get them the points, and he won't be playing in either of those games. He's got that nasty gash on his head, which we all saw on Facebook yesterday, and so it's going to be difficult in Ukraine. I don't think they'll win, and they were lucky when they played them there in the Euros. They probably should have lost that game last year, and it took a late penalty for them to get the point at Wembley in what was it, last September. So they've had a bit of trouble against this side.
Still, it is true that if they avoid defeat in Kiev on Tuesday and win the remaining three games at home, which they should do,
they haven't won any of the games against these sides so far. You know, the last time they haven't beaten Montenegro in three attempts. It's been three draws. One of them included a Wembley under Capello in a pretty dire game when Kevin Davis made his one international appearance, I think, 3 years ago. So it's not a given at all.
And also, I think the concern for England is the centre back pairing of Jagielka and Cahill. You know, I think even Cahill kind of accepted that they're not up to the standard of Terry and Ferdinand. He was quite deferential. You know, he was saying, "Look, we're kind of a transition centre back pairing," and with Hart having the season, well, not only this season, but you know, last 6 months that he's had, you always fear that England have, you know, that susceptibility to conceding a goal, which, you know, I think could cause them, you know, all kinds of problems, you know, in terms of getting the results that they need. You know, can't keep drawing these kind of games against, you know, the same teams that are competing to qualify for the World Cup. It's, you know,
as you say. Yeah, well, there you go. So goals in the bank against Moldova, and then knuckle down for the big one against Ukraine on Tuesday. My word. Well, that's England. Barry, what about the situation elsewhere? What about, for example, Group C, where you have Germany 5 points clear, looking pretty much set to take the automatic qualifying spot? Behind them, Ireland, Austria and Sweden, all on the same points, and Ireland hosting Sweden this weekend.
Yeah, I've decided this is the most important match in Irish football history.
Good.
Because Austria are away to Germany, so we're going to assume they'll lose. Which means whoever wins between Ireland and Sweden will open a 3-point gap in second. And after that, Ireland have Austria and Germany away, while Sweden have the same two teams at home.
Ooh.
So if Ireland lose, they'll probably be in big trouble. A draw wouldn't be be a catastrophe. But if they could win this game, they'd be in pole position to come in second in the group, albeit with a long way to go and a lot of matches they could very easily make a mess of to go. I mean, Kazakhstan still have to be played, but they seem to be the group cannon fodder.
It'd be a shame for them not to make the World Cup after the terrific spectacle they brought to Euro 2012.
Well, that's it, exactly. it would be a huge loss if they weren't there. But, you know, their fans are great and they get patronised. They could win the FIFA pat on the head, oh, aren't you great, fan award, which is almost, it's a trophy. It's better than the World Cup, some might argue. Mm. Worryingly, Marco Tardelli has said, that's Ireland's assistant manager, has said that they haven't got a plan to deal with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And even more worryingly, the way the bibs were handed out at training and due to various people being knacked, it looks like Paul McShane might be in the Irish defence.
Right. Will James McCarthy be in the lineup?
Is this a James McCarthy who, according to Tuesday's pod, no one actually ever heard of him before?
No, it wasn't that we hadn't heard of him before. We've heard of three players, all with very similar names. And sometimes, I say we, this is clearly me I'm talking about, sometimes we may get a bit confused as to which one was which.
Right.
But somebody actually had a great post about the Sissoko scenario. There's a very similar kind of plethora of Sissokos out there, which can lead to similar confusion. Cissé's as well.
Yeah. Diawara's.
Yeah, Diawara's, that's a good one, yeah. Mm.
Jones.
Right. Mm.
Murphy's.
There you go.
Smith.
Van Wolfswinkel's, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, James McCarthy is born in Scotland, reared in Scotland, so obviously plays for Ireland. Recently been transferred from Wigan to Everton for, I think, £15 million. Mm. He was interviewed yesterday. He said the price tag won't be a burden. He's delighted to be back at the Premiership playing for Everton. Has been told he'll have to knuckle down and work hard to get his place in the Everton midfield, which I'm sure is not really true, considering they've just spent £15 million on him. But on the other hand, so he's bound to be, you know, upbeat and a good mood. On the other hand, you've got Shane Long, who flew back to England on a private jet that was chartered by Hull City on Monday night. Thought he was about to sign for Hull, and then the deal collapsed. So he flew back to training, and he's going to be a bit downbeat, I think, because he'll think West Brom didn't want him. They were happy to get rid of him because they thought they were getting somebody better instead, although they've since denied that. But whether the denial is true or not, I don't know.
Mm. Producer Ben says he quite literally took a plane to Hull and back. In other news, Serbia are hosting Croatia. Croatia can pretty much, a huge match that obviously, Serbia, Croatia, and Croatia can pretty much sew up their qualifying with a victory there. In the same group, Scotland will be hosting Belgium. Everyone cooing about the Belgians. Scotland, no more chance for them. And then Belgium hosts Croatia next Tuesday. There's some interesting games there. Group F. Group F. Russell.
Northern Ireland play Portugal at home. I think they've already got their mega result for this group. They beat Russia. But Cristiano Ronaldo is likely to be missing for Portugal. And then Northern Ireland have Luxembourg away next week.
Well, Portugal have to worry a little bit in this group. They are 2 points clear at the moment at the top of Group F, but Russia and Israel both have a game in hand on them. Russia are 2 points behind. Israel are 3 points behind. Israel are actually going to be playing Russia on Tuesday. Those are interesting there. In Group D, kind of jumping around alphabetically speaking, Holland can sew it up. It's between Hungary and Romania for second place. They face each other. Turkey are three behind those pair, and they just brought Fatih Terim back. Is it like a last-ditch attempt to rescue their chances?
They've done like a Greg Dyke kind of quota system as well. Greg Dyke hasn't proposed this, but because I think they've been so worried by the national team's sort of lack of progress, they've made a sort of teams can only have so many foreigners. So, you know, maybe Greg Dyke will take a leaf out of the Turkish book. You never know.
Mm, perhaps so. And Italy looking pretty good at the moment on top of Group B. 4 points clear there of Bulgaria, with Czech Republic a further point behind. Italy play Bulgaria this Friday. Where are they playing, James?
They're playing in Palermo.
Oh, that's nice. And there should be a nice passionate crowd there at the Favorita.
It should be, yeah.
Yeah. I think. Yeah.
Well, there's speculation this week about Prandelli, because they can qualify after this round of these two games for the Brazil World Cup. So there's sort of all kinds of speculation. As once qualification is secured, Prandelli will announce that he will step down after the World Cup, and so that sent all the papers in Italy in a bit of a tears as to who might succeed him already. So
who's the early favourite?
There's the sort of three you'd expect, which is Conte, Allegri, and Zaccheroni. Zaccheroni is one of the favourites because of the work he's done with Japan, who were obviously the first team to qualify for the World Cup in 2014.
Indeed they were. And after this, we'll be hearing a little bit from Sid, and then coming on to some of the other big global stories, qualifyingly speaking. Part two. He wasn't there for us on Tuesday, but he is now back with a bang, Sid Lowe, in Spain.
Hello, Jimbo, in near Earth orbit.
Exactly. How's everything with you?
All right, thank you. Yeah, not too bad.
Good. Listen, so much to talk about. Gareth Bale, but we've probably talked enough about that by now. But it's interesting, we were talking about this in Wednesday's terrific paper review thing, about the fallout that's developing over the contemporaneous decision to sell Mesut Ozil. Cristiano Ronaldo coming out and slamming club policy.
Yeah, it's very bizarre, this, because the way the story's been written, you know, sometimes you kind of read these pieces and you think, well, it's hard to believe it's exactly quite like that, because the story's written and the quotes from Ronaldo is, "I am angry about them selling Ozil." When does anyone ever describe themselves as angry? "Hello, Jimbo, how are you today?" "I'm very angry."
Well, maybe if I was Cristiano Ronaldo, I might.
Yeah, maybe. Mm. But in terms of what it captures, of course, I think it does feel like we've got a very small, or maybe even a quite big problem brewing. In that, I think there are one or two Real Madrid players who are not hugely impressed with the decision to let Mesut Ozil go. Let him go, but to encourage him to go, despite the fact that Real Madrid have tried to kind of create a media agenda. The agenda is that Ozil was after money. He didn't show the kind of required determination to stay at Madrid, that desire to be successful. He lacked the competitive edge when he realised that Isco had turned up and might well take his place. But some of the players have been, I think, relatively clear on this. I mean, as you say, there's this story that's emerged about Ronaldo not being very happy about it. There was Sergio Ramos yesterday at the Federation, and I've just come back from the Federation now. I was at the Federation yesterday, and he was, you know, one of those kind of things where you get surrounded by journalists, and he's in the middle there, and there's microphones sticking up everywhere. And what he said was that Mesut Ozil would be one of the last people that he would let go from Real Madrid. He also put a picture of Ozil on his Twitter page, basically as a kind of, I think it was Ozil's final shirt, in fact. Essentially, this is players saying, okay, Bale arriving isn't a problem, but if in the meantime we're getting rid of other players, it's quite hard to understand.
Exacerbating the problem, as it perhaps, is the fact that that same day they received a similar offer for Sami Khedira and decided to keep him but let Ozil go.
Yeah, this is a very weird one, isn't it? Because, as you say, it's been said that they had an offer for Khedira. Khedira himself has said it, and that the offer was turned down. This offer was somewhere in the region of 40 million euros, and supposedly from Man United, so yet another midfielder that theoretically Manchester United were chasing. I don't know, to be honest, I couldn't tell you for certain how true that is, exactly how big the offer was and so on, but certainly Madrid want it to be believed that this happened, and Khedira has confirmed it, so it seems very, very likely that it did happen. And to keep Khedira and let Ozil go, well, in terms of talent, obviously Ozil is bigger than Khedira, but I suppose in terms of positions on the pitch, they would have probably thought, well, Ozil is expendable and Khedira isn't.
You bring us on nicely to Manchester United, though, and their quest for a midfielder, a quest which really blew up in their faces with the whole Ander Herrera thing. First of all, can you clear up, what was the business of the three imposters?
Well, I think the fundamental problem here, the way I see it anyway, is the fundamental interpretive problem from my point of view, is that the word imposter was used. Now, the word imposter is really quite a big claim to call people imposters. And my initial thought was, yeah, well, there's a difference between knowing for sure who these guys are, or these guys not having your authorization, and actually calling them imposters.
But who called them imposters? Was it United themselves?
I don't think there is a public quote, but Manchester United put out that these guys were imposters, and it was a very, very strong word to use. I think that kind of immediately puts everyone on alert, and I think then starts the problem, because, as I say, I think imposter is an extremely strong word. Then what becomes clear is that these three guys are three lawyers. They're three lawyers from the same law firm, and these same three guys involved in doing the deal that took Javi Martinez from Athletic Bilbao to Bayern Munich, and that was also a deal that was done by triggering the buyout clause. So these guys certainly aren't imposters. They're people who've done this before. They're lawyers. They're serious people. And lawyers, by the way, don't act unless they're instructed to act. Anyway, it then emerges, and this is the basis of the story I wrote for Guardian, that these guys were far from being imposters, far even from being people who are unauthorized, were sent there with authorization, formal authorization from Manchester United. But when it became clear to United that it was going to be very, very difficult to get this deal done, that there wasn't any guarantee it would succeed, they then distanced themselves from it and then started claiming that they didn't know who these guys are. Now, the reason why this didn't happen is fundamentally because, and I would bore you to tears if I went into this properly, and we wrote it a little bit in the blog the other day, and I've written about it before, but the way that the buyout clause system works in Spain is complex, and it's not entirely clear even if it's applicable to international transfers at all. And so because it's complex, you need time legally to put something like that in place. Javi Martinez's deal, they were working on that for well over a month to try and get that done and to get it right and to make sure they had the legal and the legal arguments in place and make sure they were protecting themselves against any potential comeback from it. Manchester United tried to do this on the final day. You cannot do a deal where you can risk it, but it's very, very risky to do a deal as complex as that on the final day without having negotiated it. Then the next element comes in, which is United saying that they thought the buyout clause was too much, and that's the fundamental reason why this broke down. And that, you know, this is another issue quite apart from denying that they know these guys that were actually working for them. And that is also a little bit strange, because they had been told quite categorically that if you buy this player, you are buying him by depositing the buyout clause. So yes, we think that's too much. Tough luck. That's what you've been told. That's the way it is.
Right. Well, Sid, let's just come into Spain for a second then, because you got Finland away in Helsinki for La Roja on Friday, who are top of Group I, Spain, but only 1 point clear of France, worryingly enough, and then a friendly with Chile on the following Tuesday. Squad news, no Torres and no Mata, and no Torres, no Mata is probably what most fans would say in this instance, but what else?
Well, I was with the Spain squad this afternoon. They're there without PK, who's suspended. Obviously, the big kind of focal point around the Spain squad and indeed around Real Madrid at the moment is whether or not Iker Casillas will play. Vicente del Bosque has been clear in saying that Victor Valdés will be the starting goalkeeper. So that's the kind of the key piece of news, if you like. And Atletico Madrid, with three players in the squad, which I think is the highest they've had for a very, very long time.
Wow, very, very impressive. Is there concern about the top spot in the group with only that 1 point lead of France?
Yeah, of course there is. And one of the reasons of concern, of course, is because Finland. And it was Finland who in Gijón held them to a draw. And I mean, I don't know if they're still available, but I remember that game very clearly tweeted a photograph from that match, because I, in terms of positionally, I have never seen anything like it. And I know we use cliche like they spent the whole game in the Finnish half, and I took a photograph, which really was not just a one-off moment, it was representative of the match. It wasn't just that they spent the whole game in the Finnish half, they spent the whole game in basically a strip of the pitch, which was the Finland penalty area plus 10 metres. I mean, the entire Spain team, within about 10-15 metres of the Finnish area, they broke away, got the goal, and Spain only drew 1-1, and that's put them on edge. And so the focus for the and Álvaro Negredo was talking about this last night, not so much we're worried that Finland might beat us, but we're worried that Finland might be strong enough defensively, deep enough, tactically organised enough, that maybe there won't be a way through. Because, of course, when, as you say, it's only 1 point the difference between Spain and France, and when a group is that close, then a draw does you an enormous amount of damage.
Part three, way back in part one, James Horncastle was pointing out that Japan were the first nation to sort their place at Brazil 2014. In fact, four teams from the Asian group, Japan, Australia, Iran and South Korea, are already certain of their spots there. You now have a fifth-place playoff from Asia, which gets to play the fifth-place team from South America for a World Cup place. This is getting quite exciting now, isn't it? Hey, Jacob. Who are the two teams in that fifth-placed
Uruguay.
No. From the Asian group.
Uzbekistan and Jordan.
Uzbekistan and Jordan. They play this Friday. No World Cup history from either nation. It's part of the magic of World Cups, isn't it? New nations, new lands, new territories.
Yep.
Ambush marketing. Sponsorship.
Yep.
Of major multinational stuff.
Yep.
New musical instruments.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not been a good week for Uzbekistan, though.
Oh, has bad stuff happened?
Well, now just they haven't done well in sport this week.
What happened to them?
Well, their player lost to Andy Murray, so.
Ooh.
The US Open.
Yeah, right.
Dennis Histamin. So, you know, it's a good omen for Jordan there.
Mm. So, Andy Murray's an antihistamine.
Yeah.
You got there first. He's an antihistamine.
Good.
There you go.
I bet people must have said that. Huh? What are they
probably
doing, these people?
Yeah. Well, hopefully, Kevin Mitchell said that in his report.
Mitchell is better than that. He's above it.
Is he?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a very nice man, an excellent journalist.
Good. All right, then. Here's Evan G saying, Jimbo, some fodder for Thursday's pod. Costa Rica taking passive-aggressive revenge on the USA for the snow game. Snow game, Jacob, you remember? Denver in March?
Yep.
When they played on through a blizzard. Los Ticos forced to continue a game that apparently they actually wanted to continue themselves until it started going wrong and then they decided they didn't. But anyway, it's been the subject of some controversy ever since. And now they're hosting the Americans, it must be on Friday, I think. Yeah, it's Friday, the game. America need 4 points from their next two to sew up their places. They are taking on Costa Rica first and then Mexico. Anyway, a Deadspin, which M&G links to, have a very interesting article about Costa Rican preparations for this game, which include not giving the US players priority at immigration, forcing them to go through the same queue that everybody else does. And there's a little video of everybody shouting at them as they go. It's quite fun. They provided three training ground options, all of whom then turned the US down. they didn't provide any match balls for practice, so the US had to use their own. And crucially, cab drivers reportedly will be deliberately slowing traffic ahead of Friday's kickoff to block the US access to the game.
This is all a bit childish, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I think it's highly amusing.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's happening to someone else.
Right. It'd be pretty funny if it was happening to England too. They're kind of parking the bus only with taxis in a very real sense. And there's this website, Deadspin, also includes a front page of a local newspaper, which has got a cartoon of Captain America being manhandled, really, by two beefy Costa Rican types. They've never won there. Did you know America never won in Costa Rica? So that's a big game. A crunch match. Crikey. Anybody else got anything else for part three? I've got one or two other little things.
I've got lots of South American and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
African
let's go.
Stuff.
Right, let's go.
Well, in South...
Sex it up, though, Barry, yeah?
Pardon?
These are pretty far-flung countries we're talking about, so maybe sex it up a little.
You want me to sex up South American football?
And African right. stuff, too.
Well, at the moment in South America, it's Argentina, Colombia, Ecuador, Chile, top four places.
They're all guaranteed if they stay in those spots.
Yeah. And Uruguay are fifth, so they're going for the playoff spot.
Against Jordan or Uzbekistan.
Toughy. But Venezuela are just behind Uruguay. But apparently their manager, they play Chile. They're away to Chile, but apparently their manager has said he's going to struggle to pick a team because 20 of his squad have gone down with some sort of stomach bug. So, and may be incapacitated for the game, or if they play, may end up having similar accidents to the ones you discussed that happened at the World's Strongest Man.
Yeah. Making the wrong kind of runs.
Yes, exactly. Ecuador play Bolivia, and Ecuador in third place. They play Bolivia in an altitude derby.
Oh, nice.
And it's Ecuador's first match, I think, since Chucho Benitez died in July.
Ah.
And he played 9 games and scored 4 in these qualifiers already. So that's bound to be quite an emotional occasion. Radamel Falcao has joined up with the Colombia squad for their game against Ecuador. And they face Uruguay as well. So they're two big, big games for Colombia. Who will qualify on Friday if they win and Uruguay don't beat Peru.
Who will?
Colombia.
Colombia will qualify if they win and Uruguay don't beat Peru.
Peru.
Right.
But Uruguay almost certainly will beat Peru, but which means Colombia may have to wait till next week to qualify when they beat Uruguay.
Right. That's so, probably enough sexed up South American teams for now. What about Africa?
Well, Africa is fascinating altogether because of their very convoluted qualification system.
Right.
10 groups of four teams.
Yes.
And the group winners go into 5 two-legged playoffs, which means South Africa could go out even if they do win this weekend. Nigeria play Malawi at home and will go out if they lose. Ghana plays Zambia at home and will go out if they lose. Cameroon play Libya at home and will go out if they lose. And Senegal play Uganda at home and they will go out if they lose. So you could conceivably, it's a very, very unlikely, obviously, you could lose South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Cameroon and Senegal this weekend could all go out of the World Cup.
Wow. It's amazing.
You didn't know that, did you?
I did not know that. But we do now, crucially. Tell you what, Jonathan Wilson, you've kind of done scorched earth. He's going to have nothing to talk about. He's in on Monday.
Well, this is the thing. I was doing a bit of prep last night, and I saw this about South Africa. And so I wasn't sure. Like, I was thinking, that can't be right. Or, you know, all those teams couldn't possibly. So I texted Wilson to see if it was the case, and he assured me it was. He reckons South Africa and I think Senegal are the only two who are in trouble, I think.
Really?
But, yeah, he assured me he was. So then I said, oh, are you on the pod tomorrow? And he said he wasn't. And I was like, great, because now I can look knowledgeable.
Right.
I like how Kevin Prince-Boateng has come out of international retirement and flown back to Ghana.
Ah, good.
For... because, well, there's a World Cup on, isn't there?
Mm.
So, you know.
Are you saying he's a fair weather?
He has his priorities right.
Yeah. Well, riding to the Black Stars rescue. One or two other little bits of news from around the world of football, Jacob. Bristol. First derby there in 7 years. Because of them being in different divisions and stuff.
Johnston's
but through
paint.
The magic of the Johnston's paint trophy. Yeah. Bristol City and Bristol Rovers met. Was it Ashton Gate? Where was it?
Yeah.
Clearly, none of us watched this game, but there was big trouble as the supporters clashed on the field and then in various other locales throughout the city. And, yeah.
Such a nice city as well.
Bristol? Mm. Are you being ironic? You like it? No, yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world, yeah. I was born in Bristol, actually.
Oh, really?
Have that.
You Rovers are a city. If you'd been in the tear-up last night, on which side would you... been like
sincerely I just want football to be the winner, and this was a night of shame for football, so I don't know how I would have there's no answer to that really.
Speaking of Bristol and people from Bristol, think Ian Holloway named his 25-man Premier League squad yesterday, and because he'd brought in so many new faces, he obviously had to drop some of the old ones, one of whom was Irish football's Owen Garvin. And Owen Garvin promptly went onto Twitter and tweeted cryptically, it could be argued, I'll be there long after him, don't worry. So it's still there.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I surmised in the rumour mill today that he might have been in the supermarket with doing his big shop in a very long queue, and he might have seen Ollie or some other bloke he knows going to the 10 items or less checkout with a half full basket and went, I'll be here long after him, don't worry.
Right. He might have been heading into the bathroom with a newspaper on his arm.
Could have been one of those truck touching, you know, touch the truck.
Now, what is a touch the truck? And apologies, listener, because we really have been listening to this. What is a touch the truck competition?
It's where you get, say, a truck, you know, we'd say a Range Rover or a big a pickup, and it's in an American mall, and some radio station picks 10 names out of a hat.
Mm. Have you ever heard of this, James?
No.
Jacob?
And the people anyway assemble, so you just grab a piece of truck.
Yes.
And the last person to let go wins it.
Well,
That happened in Malcolm in the Middle once.
Yeah. So basically, how many days do they stay there?
4 or 5. People start hallucinating. People fall asleep and let go.
Wow.
People.
That must make extraordinary television.
Well, it was a show on Channel 5 once. Right. I'm surprised you didn't get it. It sounds like the thing, kind of thing that'd be right up your alley. But Orangeness's Dale Winton was the presenter. And some eco-warrior guy won it and was going to sell it and donate the money, or use the money to set up a political party. I'm not sure how that worked out for him. But
okay. Are you referring to Jerry Middleton from Winchester, Hampshire?
I don't remember his name.
Who touched the truck, research done by producer Ben indicates, for over 81 hours. I don't know how many days is that? 3 and a bit days. Yeah, that's a long time.
But you're allowed to get someone to sub in for you.
Can you eat while you're there?
Can you tag team? Can you tag
yeah,
out?
Can you tag team? So no, like, clearly you can't toilet.
I don't know.
You watched it.
What happened when you...
I didn't.
When you have a bathroom break? Presumably you have to go there, no? You can't let go. I wonder if we could stage a similar thing on the next international break, or indeed a Monday show, but it, instead of Touch the Truck, it would be Listen to the Pod. And the listener who stays listening to the pod for longest actually would win something, which we would reveal at the end. You'd have to tell us what the last words were, and no skipping forward. Competing to be the last words in this day's pod are news from Football Italia's website saying that after just 2 Serie A rounds, and this is sad, rumours are suggesting Genoa will sack Fabio Liverani and bring in Andrea Stramaccioni. That, to be fair, there were suspicions about this after they conceded 5 goals at the weekend to Fiorentina. Liverani, who made history, he was the first black player for Italy, wasn't he?
Mm.
Back in the mists of time. And a slightly surprising appointment by Preziosi, but then Preziosi traditionally goes through 5 or 6 in a season. So
it looked like kind of quite a responsible long-term appointment from Preziosi, because Liverani was working in their youth setup, and so they promoted him with the idea of him bringing through young players. But knowing Preziosi as a sort of mangia allenatore, I think it's only a sort of matter of time before he gives Liverani the chop, which is, you know, kind of unfortunate. I mean,
well, that's very much the nature of the game, though, isn't it? Producer Ben, oh, he's on fire today. He says, so you might have chop Liverani. Here's another tidbit for you as we move right on. Mourinho's son, who's 14 years old and is a goalkeeper, has signed for Fulham.
And didn't Mourinho's father save a penalty when his first game or something? Saved a penalty from Eusebio. I saw Jonathan Wilson tweeting back in the 60s this morning.
Right, so it's in the genes.
Yeah.
Fellow I used to share a flat with was a supply teacher, and he taught Mourinho Jr., who I would imagine that goalkeeper is, several years ago. And actually, and it was to his professional shame, spent the day scourging him with questions about his dad.
Well, you would, really, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the kid was like 5 or something, 6.
Well, the best age, because, you know, they can be a bit talkative, you know.
Yeah, well, anyway, I thought it was an outrage. But.
All right. In a similar son of somebody famous kind of connection note, Colin Bryce, who's very much one of the judges on World's Strongest Man, one of the leading figures in British Strongman, teaches Romeo Beckham football.
Yeah.
How about that?
I played football recently against Callum Best. So
really?
Yeah.
My son used to do jiu-jitsu with Rocco Ritchie. And Thandi Newton's daughter. Blimey, she actually used to turn up, whereas Madonna used to send a minder. This isn't just some ordinary kind of place down at, down in kind of, well, not Kensal Rise, but that kind of way.
Yeah, Thandi Newton was in my local pizzeria recently.
No way.
She was, yeah.
It's like Max Rushton. Speaking of which.
Yeah, speaking of which, Barry. What are you doing on Sunday? You doing one on Sunday?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. What time will that be on?
They can enjoy it from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m.
What frequency?
I don't know.
Cool. Good. Well, listeners, many thanks for joining us for that. We'll be back on Monday when situation may have got very delicate indeed for many big nations. I mean, we joke about the international break, but it really is crunch time by next week ahead of those big games on Tuesday. Make sure then you join us as we round up whatever you need to know about the Friday games and look forward to what's in store in the second round of matches. That'll be with Jonathan Wilson. Who else is joining us? John Ashdown and Radio Broadcasting's Barry Glendening. Look forward to seeing you all for that on Monday. In the meantime, have a super weekend, everyone. Bye for now.